Hello again and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. Melanie Breasts is almost a household name across the coast. Many would know the character from countless charity events, bingo nights and cabaret-style entertainment. Matt Dunstan is the man in the heels and underneath the makeup, and he's been a drag performer for almost 30 years, starting his career in Melbourne back in the 80s. What was it like when Matt first came out to his parents in his teens? We talk about the pressure and stress Matt put on himself when he was growing up, and whether anything has changed for gay kids and teens these days, and what was it that made him cry and cry for days? I hope this podcast informs and inspires. We started by talking about exactly where in Melbourne Matt grew up.
I grew up in Melbourne, country Victoria. I grew up in a place called Pakenham Upper when it was called Pakenham Upper, and then they changed it to Upper Pakenham because people didn't really like the name Pakenham Upper. But I, in my current career, I think it's actually hysterical.
Well, you know, I actually lived and worked in Melbourne for 7 years, and when people used to say Pakenham Upper, I knew it was Pakenham, but I thought it was just a joke. But it really was called Pakenham Upper.
It was Pakenham Upper.
Upper Pakenham.
Yeah, absolutely. They did change it. I grew up in the country, grew up on farms with my family. We later moved to Druin up Gippsland Way and then lived on farms up there, had cattle and everything, and did shows in the bush. always sort of...
What kind of shows?
Well, just variety shows. We sort of put our own little bush stages together in the middle of the scrub, literally.
Siblings or mum and dad?
Yeah, with all my siblings. Yeah, yeah. My two stepbrothers and my older brother. Yeah, we all used to put productions together, and I'd occasionally dress my little brothers up in ways that they didn't really want to, but they did.
I think everybody does that. I've got a photo of my sister dressed me up in a dress at the age of 5 or 6 or something, and it was like, I think that just happens in all families.
Oh, absolutely.
Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't.
Well, you sort of, it's the unspoken word that you can push boundaries that you never get to with other people. So.
Obviously, there was a desire and a passion to kind of be up on a stage or to entertain.
Oh, gosh, yeah. From a very young age, I remember, well, my family telling me that at a very young age, at 2.5, I used to kick my grandmother's bedroom door open and go, "Introducing Matthew Dunstan." So it was there from then. It sort of, yeah, all my family being quite musical and pianists, musicians. My great uncle plays the violin. My dad played the sax. My grandmother was a pianist. My great aunt and great uncle were pianists in Adelaide. So there's been a lot of sort of artistic flair in our family, I guess.
And what was the nature of the act? Was it a bit of vaudeville? Was it like slapstick? Was it singing? And what was part of the act?
For our family show.
Well for you, yeah. When you were talking about, you know, just entertaining and always wanting to be the kind of the centre of attention.
I didn't really have any specific act that I preferred. It was just whatever sort of came into my mind at the time was something I'd have a go at. And I've always sort of been a pretty have-a-go kind of person. Yeah. So I just sort of run with what is in my head at the time and see what comes out of it, really. But it's sort of grown into where I am today.
And what about influences? Like, was it, you know, the Marx Brothers and things like that, or more probably, of a cabaret style?
Probably my biggest influence was Dame Edna.
Really? From Moonee Ponds?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gotta love a gladdy. My influences have been through music and the arts. Comedians especially, I sort of tend to always take that comedic lean to everything I do, and that's sort of where I really love slapstick and all of the cheesy, corny comedy stuff. That's really what irks me. You know, it gets me going and excites me. Yeah.
And did you get a chance, Matt, to move then to a larger audience and a larger stage? So from country and regional Victoria to like Melbourne?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I moved, my mum and dad divorced when I was younger, and so I sort of would split my time between both families, as you do. And I went to, even through school and things like that, we created a video production studio, and then was very involved in that and did a lot of productions for the school. We did a promotional video for them called Pick a School, which was like a tongue-in-cheek game show where we got to see who could actually pass to go to the school. So I did that. I then was in a few plays, joined the local theatre groups around the Dandenong area, and sort of then did a lot of my teen growing up around Dandenong, and joined the local theatre groups there and loved that, and then went went and did a television acting course in Melbourne and just found it was so cutthroat and everybody was sort of clawing their way to be at the front of the class and be noticed. So I sort of sat back and just thought, okay, well, if my turn's meant to come, it will come. And just sort of, I don't know, that sort of slipped by to take over with my drag shows then, and that's sort of what picked up the what I gravitated towards in the end, because I found, wow, you could have your own show and your own audience without having to claw your way to the top, as it were, in the mainstream.
And what advice would you give people? It's really, my son's a bit artistic as well. He loves, you know, the movies and things like that. And he's only asking me this morning about, oh, he's only eight, but he's like, hey, you know, how do you get into movies? And I think, well, I do want to say, look, you better be prepared to wait a lot of tables. But, you know, a lot of people have those dreams.
Well, I think my dad's advice is probably the same advice that I'd give now, considering that's sort of what worked for me. And I guess that's what got me through at the end, which was if you aim for the stars and you clear the back fence, you're doing okay. and so you just keep on pushing. But it's just about never giving up and finding the opportunity wherever you can, really. That's sort of how it happens. It never happens in a planned way, I don't think. I think it's always just a matter of circumstance that you're in the right place at the right time and you're the right person, you know. And as much as you think you're the right person for something, you don't know what other people's visions are anyway. So stay true to yourself and just keep pushing yourself out there. And then the right position for you comes along.
Tell me about those early drag shows. And what era are we talking about?
It sort of started in the 80s, as my alter ego at the time was called Atrocia, because it was atrocious. It was my very first experience in makeup and wig styling and all the other things that went with it. And of course, in those days, it was very hard to get shoes in my size, because I'm a men's size 12. So it's not like you can pop into any women's shoe store and pick up a fabulous pair of
heels.
So
what did you do with the shoes?
Well, I actually had my pair of school brogues that I delaced and then laced up with Diamante stars and things, and just appliqued my shoes up. But until I finally found some American suppliers that did provide larger sizes. But in those days, you were looking at around $300 for a pair of shoes. And that was a lot of money in my early teens. So that was around 15 when I started. And then from there, I did my first show at 17, or my first professional show.
And what did that involve? What did a show involve?
Well, it was basically a two-hour cabaret show in a little bar called Trish's Coffee Lounge in North Melbourne, which was sort of like a bit of a drag institution through the 80s and early 90s, until Trish passed away and it closed down and got pulled down. And yeah, now it's sort of, there's no bit of history there.
But that's a long show, two hours.
Yeah, but we had a break, fortunately. But it was a two-hour cabaret production. Yeah. So it was sort of a bit of dinner and show kind of thing. We just pulled together every song that we all liked and did our own choreography and costuming and everything, and just really had a go at trying to make our own drag production show.
What do you remember about the reaction from the audience? And I imagine it would have been quite out there in the early 80s.
Absolutely.
For you to put on a show like this.
I think that, especially in the 80s, the people that were there generally knew what they were looking for, and so you sort of had that safe, welcome space where you could open up and perform and express yourself without sort of too much ridicule or questioning. I think it's sort of actually, as I moved out of that into the mainstream a bit more, that was when I sort of found that there were more challenges in new audiences and what they thought and things like that. I mean, I still get reactions these days that...
You're talking about negative reactions to what you do?
Well, not necessarily negative, just surprised and shocked reactions. I've been told so many times that I'm not a very pretty lady, which I don't intend to be, but people still think that that's where I'm heading towards. So it's like, yeah, well, actually, no.
I imagine there were a lot of other challenges as well. Was there a lot of discrimination, or the pubs and the clubs and the scene where you played? And
I think the biggest discrimination actually comes from the scene itself, and it's usually from other performers or other followers of other performers that sort of, you know, everyone always has their favourites and their opinions about what is good drag, what is not so good drag, or the best costumes or the best choreography or best performance. I've always been a big believer in that you just give 110% of your energy and do what you do best, and then my following has sort of been developed that way, and it's sort of hard to sometimes ignore the noise around you, and you know, everybody sort of has an opinion and says, oh, Mary used to do that song and she used to do it better and her costume was better or whatever. And so you just sort of have to, you know, you take it on lightly and you sort of analyze yourself, but you don't take it too seriously. Yeah. Otherwise you just keep on beating yourself up.
And in your opinion, Matt, what does make a good drag show?
I'm sort of old school drag in that it's really, it's taking the piss in a way, and
you work a bit blue.
well, sometimes it can. Sometimes it can be a little risque. But it's more about like being an over the top version of female impersonation. So everything is larger than life. The makeup is bigger. The hair is bigger. The heels are bigger. The costumes are bigger. It's really not taking it too seriously. Where I found actually more so. In the 90s and then in the noughties and now, that it's sort of become in the mainstream a lot more serious, and people are trying harder to look more like women.
The business or the show?
No, the shows, yeah. Right. That people are trying harder to look more like women than actually to perform, you know, and I suppose that's where I sort of go back to that Dame Edna kind of role where she is over the top, and the makeup's over the top, her personality's over the top, the colours, you know, the feathers, the furs, yeah. Everything is over the top.
So like there's no question that that's a guy in drag.
Absolutely.
And that's the show. Yeah. What you're saying before is interesting, isn't it, when people, you know, the expectation that people would come along and go, oh, he's a very unattractive woman. Well, that's not that's not the point of the show. That's not what I'm trying to do here.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned that your mum and dad split up early. Do you remember their reaction to you doing these drag shows at all? Did they come and see you perform?
Well, they have, yeah. My dad not so much because he lives so far away, but my mum's been to quite a few of the shows, and actually just a couple of months ago she was up here on the coast and came to a couple of shows up here, so that was great to let her see where it's sort of evolved to now. It's always evolving. I think the biggest thing for me was coming out to my parents, more so than the shows that I did. I think they sort of accepted the shows very easily because that was part of my nature as a performer.
Do you want to talk about that? Because I think that connects
about
with
coming out.
Yeah. Because I think that connects with the kids that go through the same thing. Well, how old were you?
When I first knew myself, I was about 12 and a half, and it took me a good couple of years before I finally got up the nerve to tell my mum. And so I told my mum first because that was the safest one. With my mum, I came up to her and said, Mum, look, we have to have a serious talk. And she said, what, you're gay? And so she already knew, and she went, yeah, I know that. And then that afternoon she was at my auntie's place telling them all that I'd finally come out, and then they all grilled me around my auntie's dining table the next day about what's it like to be gay. And it was a very interesting conversation we had as a family. Well, I don't know whether this is for radio, because they were asking some pretty personal questions about what we get up to. I found that their questions were very normal, and just really gauging whether or not I was that different to them in normal life. And now it's sort of, you know, come full circle that we realise that we are all the same. We all still have animals and houses and lives and jobs and careers and everything. And it's, I guess, the acceptance across the board that's really made it normal now for, you know, we are actually normal people that live normal lives.
Was your dad in the same boat? Did he go,
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't tell my dad until I was 17, until he finally asked me. I guess the thing that I was worried about with my dad is he was a very proud family man, very strong family traditions, and the biggest regret I had was that I wasn't going to carry on the family name, and I wasn't going to be the one to have...
She had other siblings. You have a brother?
I do, And yes, I have a niece and nephew that I'm the godparent for both of them, and that's enough. I don't need my children to know what that should be like. Yeah. But my dad, he actually asked me. He sort of started it with, you know, your friends that you hang around with, are they, you know, like... AC/DC, you know, and I was like, what? You know, and he said, you know, are they gay? And I said, yes. And he went, oh, okay, I thought they might have been. And then he said, partway through the conversation, so are you? And I went, am I what? And he went, you know, like your friends. And I said, what, gay? And he went, yes. And I said, yes. And he went, okay, I always thought you might have been. That's all good. I don't see you any different. And I think I actually put more pressure on myself than any of my family did to live a normal, supposed normal life, whatever that is.
But, and I guess that's the issue for a lot of young men and women that want to come out to their parents or family and friends. It's the pressure that they impose on themselves, isn't it?
Really? Absolutely, yeah, because you see everything in the world is, you know, it's the perfect family unit. I mean, everybody wants to live up to all of the expectations of society and, you know, have that perfect model family that is seen.
But are there things that, make it easier these days? I mean, there's film and literature and the arts and...
It's in the mainstream now, so it is a lot easier to...
Same-sex marriage?
Yeah, ta-da. There's the biggest milestone in the community yet. That has really changed. It's changed the perception for a lot of people, but there are still, of course, some people that don't agree with it. That's fine, then that's their choice. But for the majority of the community now, I think it's finally that time where it's not such a big question anymore. And also for those that are finding their way and choosing who they are, finding who they are, there's so many more services now, and it's so much easier to be able to talk to somebody and say how you're feeling without getting the ridicule that you might have got in the past. You know, I mean, I remember in my early days having my name written across the back of the school wall with one of the teachers' names and things like that, and was always picked on and pushed over and tripped and punched and kicked and that all through my school life. And all they all were telling me I was gay before I even came to terms with it myself. And then I remember when I finally, the first time I finally decided that, yes, this is who I am, I actually cried and cried and cried for days that I didn't want to be like that, and I didn't want to be that person that they all said I was, because I didn't want to be different. I wanted to be just a normal kid like everyone else and have my friends and a normal life again. So that was a hard time sort of accepting that in myself. And I think the biggest acceptance that I had to go through was just that I'm okay and that it's not me.
You do a fair bit of work in the community now, don't you, with the Pride Festival?
Talk about
some of your involvement with those kind of organisations and the work that you do.
Sure. We've just finished the Sunshine Coast Pride Festival this weekend. It was great. We actually had to postpone it because of the rains in February, unfortunately, so it sort of came back around this weekend. I run a monthly drag night on the coast in Maroochydore called Pinkies. That's been going now for 2.5 years every month, and the last Saturday of the month. That's really growing into a real good community space. I also, outside of the gay community on the Sunshine Coast, I'm very involved in a lot of different groups, fundraising for the RSPCA here in Noosa. I host the Million Paws Walk every year. I help out with Wildlife Rescue, Queensland Koala Crusaders. There are a few of the fundraisers we've got coming up. My Drag Queen Bingo Nights is probably my biggest claim to fame on the coast. How often?
Yeah.
Well, I do a monthly night at the Bison Bar in Nambour. I'm about to launch a weekly night in Noosa coming up at Lazy River, which we used to be at until I had neck surgery, and then it sort of slipped away. And then, so we're finally bringing that back weekly. But apart from that, we're performing 2 or 3 shows a week.
Making a living out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we'll have done for a long time.
Been 29 years of doing drag now, so it's sort of finally starting to pay some dividends.
I did ask you earlier if, you know, the whole coming out thing is becoming an easy transition for young kids, and considering that you're still involved in that arena and helping and talking to, are there still challenges for? I'd imagine
there is many challenges. Yeah, and I mean, social media is another thing. You know, the bullying issues and things like that as well has actually made it harder in some ways that we never had those issues, because when somebody said something, it was either written or said, and it wasn't sort of done behind a computer screen where people sort of seem to be able to say things that they really wouldn't say to somebody face to face. And I think we move a lot faster now than we used to. And I think for young kids these days, there is so much pressure on them to be the right person and do the right thing, and in the eyes of everyone, they want to be seen as a normal person in the eyes of everyone else, and sort of finding out who they are amongst.
I guess you're right, irrespective of whether you're gay or straight, that there are a lot of a whole heap of other pressures because of social media, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lay it on top of people.
And you can't get away with things that you used to be able to, because somebody would had to have a camera in the past, whereas everyone has a mobile phone. And generally, if you're in a crowd of 200, there's at least 10 that have taken.
So what's your advice when someone comes to you and talks to you about that kind of stuff, Matt? Like, what do you say? What do you...
Look, I'm always happy to talk to anybody and push them in the right direction for the support that they need. The support here on the coast has grown a lot. Actually, last year we had our first Rainbow Formal, which is for 15, 16 and 17-year-olds at school graduating that have never had a chance to go to a formal because, of course, you couldn't bring a same-sex partner. So on the coast, we Sunshine Coast Rainbow Network launched the first Rainbow Formal in Queensland last year. And that was an amazing event. We had about 85 kids come to that, and it was just amazing to see them all finally be free and be able to bring their partners and celebrate how hard they've worked through their school life and be able to finally receive the reward that everyone else always did. Without having to pretend that they weren't gay to go to a formal, you know.
Are you a spiritual person, Matt?
Probably more spiritual than religious. Yeah, I believe in karma and things like that, I guess. And it's sort of proven that to me over the years of performing drag, because you sort of just have to keep telling yourself when people are trying to tread in your turf that don't worry, they'll get theirs, or karma will work it out. Because of course, you know, once you expose yourself to the public, then you're open to ridicule and open to other people trying to see, well, when they see an opportunity in it, then they'll try and sort of sneak that out from underneath you in some way. So you just, I've been quite smart these days, I guess, in making sure that I keep a strong hold on everything that I create and I do, because there's just always that risk that somebody can slip it out from underneath you and run away with your ideas.
Are there many other drag performers on the coast?
On the coast, not so many. There's probably a few that have come up here to retire, like I did, actually, moving from Melbourne.
Well, I didn't ask you that. Was that the reason why you moved from Melbourne?
Well, I was doing four shows a week in Melbourne at the time, and I just finished a show, actually. My partner had said to me, you know, why don't we do something different and move to Noosa? A friend wants to go into business, so let's go up and do that. And I was like, well, I've got four shows a week here in Melbourne. I'm really, really busy. Probably no. And then got home after one show and had discovered that some other groups had already contacted the venue trying to take over the night that I'd built from like a 30 people a week to 200 people a week. And then they sort of were trying to undercut and steal my night. And I got home that night and went, okay, that's it. I think I'm done. And I said, let's go to Noosa.
When was that? Do you remember what year was it?
That was 2004.
Okay.
So, 14 years ago. And I came up here. We bought a chicken shop in Noosa. And it was funny, actually, one of my good friends in Melbourne said, it's really ironic that normally when people come up to you and they say, wow, you're an amazing performer, what did you used to do? Well, I used to have a chicken shop. But instead they go, wow, you have a chicken shop, what did you used to do? Well, I used to be an amazing performer. So anyway, I came up here and I sort of put Melanie under the bed for a couple of years and said, no, I'm done with that. And I flew down to Melbourne a few times and did some guest appearances, and that was sort of enough. And then joined the local theatre groups up here. Noosa Arts Theatre, did a few plays with them, with Coolum, the Coolum Players. I did a few plays with them. Did the Gimpy Muster with
How'd that go down?
The Zodiac Groups. That was hysterical. I played Cha-Cha in Greece, and we did Greece the Musical at the Muster.
At the Muster?
Yeah, and the year it got flooded out, of course. So I was in drag in gumboots. Very fashionable. I sort of joined community groups and theatre groups and up here, and sort of got my stimulation for performing through theatre up here. And then bit by bit, I did a couple of bingo fundraisers for Noosa Arts to help their building fund. And then from there, bit by bit, I started to do more shows, and people kept saying, when are you going to do another drag show? When are you going to do another drag show? And it sort of unfolded to going back. I've sort of done full circle and gone right back to where I began, or where I left Melbourne. Now is my career up here. So
you're full-time carer for your partner too, is that right, Matt?
Yeah, my partner's permanently disabled now.
Do you want to talk about what happened there?
I unfortunately had an accident in the mines, and had his whole spine collapsed.
Was that after you moved to Noosa?
Yeah, yeah.
So since 2004?
Yeah, so it actually happened in 2012. Yeah, so quite recent still. Yeah, but he's had three operations now, a nerve stimulator put in. He has like 14 screws and rods down his back and stuff and can't get about much. So he's my sort of number one priority apart from my shows now. So fortunately, my shows is actually what keeps us going. And yeah, and yeah, so, but I spend time, as much time as I can, at home with him. And yeah, then the rest of the time is spent with my dogs or rehearsing shows or or performing. Yeah, so that's sort of where I'm at now.
Do you have a desire to perform more? Like, would you perform more if you could?
No, I think I have enough on right now. Yeah, I mean, it's that sort of industry that you sort of take the work, you know, nice work if you can get it. You take what comes up, and it's all peaks and troughs. So you just sort of try and save your pennies when it's good, because when the quiet seasons come, it's sort of it's quiet, and then.
Well, I see you out there quite often at a lot of events, from Noosa Alive to. So is there a peak? Like, is winter the quietest for you? Or
no, winter's probably our busiest actually. Yeah, coming into May now, we're pretty heavily booked up every week. We're doing three or four. We're doing Bundaberg, Hervey Bay, all in one week. I think I've got four shows in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, we do Noosa, Bundy, Hervey Bay, and then Marucci in 4 days. And yeah, there's a few of those weekends. But yeah, the quiet period for us generally is sort of the heading into Christmas, so mid-December until probably end of January, because of everyone's doing school holidays
and of course
all of those other things. And then it sort of kicks off from February again, and we start up again.
Do you ever envisage leaving Noosa? Would you go back to Melbourne? Would you?
No, Noosa's my home now. I still love Melbourne. I love the life and the lifestyle.
I miss the energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like chalk and cheese. It's hard to describe to people. What I say is I miss the vibrancy and
the cosmopolitan
the diversity,
feel of it.
Of Melbourne. But then at the same time I say, but if I'm ever sitting on the beach at Little Cove, nothing compares to that.
Exactly right.
Well, that's another world.
I actually look at Melbourne and go, yep, I miss it. I love it, but I can't deal with the busy anymore. I think that's what I've become accustomed to up here, and I really like that laid back lifestyle we have here. It's sort of much more of a quality of life than driving an hour where you can drive the same distance in 5 minutes here on the coast. So,
I really appreciate you coming in. Thanks, Matt.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
Matt Dunstan there, a.k.a. Melanie Breasts. And I hope you enjoyed that. And if you think that it's relatable or someone else might get something out of this podcast, then feel free to share it on social media, tag your friends. And if you listen to the podcast via Wooshka, Stitcher or iTunes, please feel free to rate and review the podcast. Remember, there'll be two fresh conversations up on our In Noosa Magazine website every week, every Monday and every Thursday. I hope you'll keep coming back to visit. InNoosaMagazine.com.au/conversations.